In this episode, I'll be talking with Scott Beckstead of the Wild Horse Refuge in Colorado. We'll talk about how he's helping wild horses who have been rounded up by the BLM return to a life of freedom. So here we go, episode 245, Wild Horses with Scott Beckstead. Hi, I'm Karen Rolfe, and welcome to Horse Training in Harmony. This podcast is about you making progress with your horse in a way that you both can love. It's about learning how to move and be in harmony. Because yes, you really can develop a horse to be both athletic and happy. When we show up as our best selves for our horses will show up for us. So, let's get started. Scott Beckstead worked as an attorney in private practice for 17 years on the Central Oregon coast before going to work full-time in the animal protection sector as a legislative lobbyist, agricultural policy director, and equine welfare specialist. He's known for his special expertise in the field of animal law, and he provides training to law enforcement agencies on how to handle and work with those animals and how to investigate equine and livestock cruelty and neglect. He serves currently as the Chief Equine Programs Director for the Wild Animal Sanctuary, where he oversees the organization's work to save and protect equines, both wild and domestic. I really loved talking with him and hearing how he brings positive outcomes to wild horses who would otherwise have not so positive existences. He exudes passion for horses and all animals, and I think you'll really love meeting him. Hi, Scott. Thank you so much for being here on the podcast.
Karen, it's an honor and a privilege, and I'm looking forward to having this conversation.
Awesome. Yeah, so we met just recently. You were at Ibericon, the Iberian Showcase at the World Equestrian Center here in Ocala. And I know you did at least one presentation about the Wild Horse Refuge in Craig, Colorado, and I missed them. But when I was going around at the booths and saw you, I'm like, oh, I've got to, follow up. And I was so happy that you were going to join me here. So I get to hear all about it. So I thought maybe we could just start by letting you tell people like what the Wild Horse Refuge is and what your basic role is.
Sure. Well, Karen, the Wild Horse Refuge is a privately owned and operated sanctuary for Colorado-born wild horses that have been rounded up by the federal government, put up for adoption. What we do is we work closely with the Bureau of Land Management, or the BLM, to take in those unadopted horses and horses that that may be sale authority horses, which means that they're the ones most at risk from falling into the wrong hands. Our goal and our mission is really to let these wild horses reclaim their freedom and live out the rest of their lives on 30,000 acres where there is abundant water, abundant forage, and where they never have to want for anything else as long as they live. The Wild Horse Refuge is owned and operated by a nonprofit organization called the Wild Animal Sanctuary, which is both the name of the organization and also the name of our flagship sanctuary outside of Denver in Keensburg, Colorado, which is home primarily to large carnivores, big cats, and so forth that have been rescued from bad situations.
That's so cool. And so what's your role at the Wild Horse Refuge?
I am the Chief Equine Programs Director for the Wild Animal Sanctuary. My primary role is helping to support the work of the Wild Horse Sanctuary or the Wild Horse Refuge, and really working to promote it among the equine world. That's why you saw me at Ibericon in Ocala last week, and I do a lot of traveling to talk to the equine world and people who support equines, both wild and domestic, about the work that we're doing, and hopefully that translates into raised awareness about the work we're doing, as well as the plight of American wild horses generally, and also hopefully to boost the support of the work that we're doing.
That's awesome. I think you're doing a good job. I have increased awareness already. So
I appreciate it. That's really my goal is to we want to make sure that people know about this facility and the work that we're doing, and you know, a big part of my message is that this is an example of a solution that is working for wild horses. We are, you know, because we are taking unadopted wild horses from the BLM, we're saving the taxpayers millions of dollars, because otherwise these animals would be in government holding facilities being fed and cared for at taxpayer expense. And so, you know, part of my mission is just to make sure that the public knows, as well as important leaders. I've been to Capitol Hill twice now, to talk to congressional offices about this operation, and I've just found amazing bipartisan support for this model. And I think, you know, the hope is that you know, that this can be looked at by our decision makers as an example of a solution that is working. It's a win for the wild horses, and it's obviously a win for the taxpayers.
Yeah, I think this is so important, and this seems to be my year of looking at important issues around horses that aren't always comfortable to look at. So I interviewed a woman, Christina Keim, who wrote a book called Unwanted, and was really looking at the horses who, you know, are discarded and get in this slaughter pipeline and all that. And it's a subject that I don't like to look at, but I was really happy I did because she really was bringing awareness. And so this, what you do is another area that is so important and so important to my heart. And sometimes I don't like to look at it because every time I see images of those beautiful wild horses rounded up and stuck in those holding pens, it just breaks my heart. And you know, everybody listening here to this podcast is a horse lover, and you know, we love being with horses and doing things with them and the feeling of riding them and the power and they heal us and you know, all of this stuff. And at the end of the day, horses don't owe us anything and we owe them so much. So, you know, I say all the time that, like, you know, we have to love horses more than we love the sport that we do. And right now, I mean, I've been on this journey and that, like, the relationship with the horse is the most important thing to me. And like to even touch a little bit of their feeling of freedom and power and spirit. And I'm thinking how, we can't let this world be a world where horses don't live free. Because like, how can we ever try to touch the freedom and power and spirit of a horse if there's no horses living in freedom where they can have that spirit and power? So I just really appreciate what you do, and it was so wonderful to be able to imagine those horses wild, rounded up, and then brought back to the wild.
Yeah, well, and first let me express to you my gratitude that you are having these uncomfortable conversations. These are the conversations, these hard conversations about horses and their welfare and what is in their best interest. These are exactly the kind of conversations we need to be having more of, precisely because of the very things that make them hard conversations. I have been an advocate for wild horses since I was an itty bitty little kid. You know, we had horses growing up, and it was always me that was speaking up for horses that were being mistreated, and neglected and so forth. And I have worked as an advocate for wild horses and domestic horses my entire adult life, and that includes when I was an attorney in private practice. I have always tried to be a voice for horses and making sure that we, as you know, the horse lovers, the people who love and appreciate these horses, are always asking what is in the horse's best interest. So again, I really want to thank you for having these conversations, because we need more of them. And yes, I mean, the wild horse and burro management issue has been controversial going all the way back to the days that led up to the passage of the 1971 Free Roaming Horses and Burros Act, and it's a controversy that involves the competing interests of the vast majority of Americans who love and support the idea of wild horses and burros living wild and free, unharmed, out on our Western public lands, and all of the interests that compete for those public lands, primarily the livestock industry, but also mining, energy extraction, recreational users, and the Bureau of Land Management, they have to balance all of those interests when they make decisions around how our public lands are used. Their mandate is to manage our public lands for multi-use, meaning that they may have an area that is designated as a wild horse herd management area, but because of their multi-use mandate, they feel like they also need to allow other uses besides just those wild horses that may live there. And that, leads them to make decisions that a lot of people really disagree with, and which is understandable. But again, I it's important to for people to realize that they are operating within a place where they try to have to draw those balances. Having said all that, I think that what all of us can agree on is that the ideal is to have our wild equines living out on public lands, wild and free, and we should be doing everything that we can, and we should be pushing both the agencies and our members of Congress to make sure that everything that we do with respect to wild horse and burro management is in those animals' best interests. And so, for a lot of people, don't like the helicopter roundups, and so, right now the most viable alternative to that is the use of fertility control. Using immunocontraceptives to keep mares from getting pregnant. Fertility control is used a lot in certain herds. I can just name them off: the Sandwash Basin herd, which is just 30 miles from the Wild Horse Refuge in northwestern Colorado, but also the Anakie herd in Utah, the Pine Nut herd in Nevada. These are all herds that are easy to access, and so they are easy to do the fertility control operations on. There are also herds that live, especially in areas like central Nevada, that are just super wild, super hard to approach. And so, for the most part, the BLM continues to rely on helicopter roundups to manage populations in those areas. But I think, again, what we can all agree on is that, we should constantly be looking for ways to manage these animals that allows them to live out there on our public lands where the public can enjoy them and see them and visit them, and live in a way where they are unharmed and they can, live wild and free, which is exactly what the Wild Horse and Burro Act was designed to do.
That's so awesome. Can I go back a little bit? Because I'm always interested also in people who manage to create, a living in their passion. So it says you said you've always been passionate about speaking up for the horses, but you were, a lawyer in private practice. Like, how did you shift from the private practice to now working full time in animal protection?
Well, as I said, I've been a horse advocate, but I've also been an animal advocate for my entire life. I love all the animals. I love down to the spiders and snakes and snails and I love them all. I have always really felt a kinship with the animal world, and also sort of an internal mission to always speak up for them. And I love speaking up for what I call the overhated animals: the coyotes, the crows, the raccoons,
Oh,
the
I
rats.
have a family of crows at my place that I have befriended, and they're now working me for peanuts, and I
I
love
mean,
it.
you know,
They're my favorites.
it's, yeah. I mean, and it's kind of funny that the animals that have capitalized on human civilization, some species have dwindled or even gone extinct because they couldn't cope with human civilization. But there are certain species that have not only coped, but actually thrived and found ways to actually do better. I mean, think of pigeons in big cities and rats, and we've got coyotes living in suburban neighborhoods. And so there are certain species that have really done a great job of adapting to people, and those are the ones we call the pests. It's those animals who have said, like, this human civilization thing is really awesome. We get like abundant food, and we and they're the ones that were like, oh, you're just pests. So I love speaking up for and I have a real soft spot in my heart for coyotes. I've always loved coyotes, and I've always been just amazed at how they adapted to this effort to just exterminate them. I mean, between the federal government and the livestock industry at the turn of the last century, they were like, let's get rid of every single coyote. And the coyotes were like, game on, bring it. And they went from being just a species that largely inhabited the Western United States. They're now in every single one of the 48, and it's just a matter of time before they figure out how to hop on a boat and go colonize Hawaii. It's just a matter of time. So I love all the animals, but how did I make this shift? When I was a lawyer in private practice, I handled, mostly, a civil caseload. But I marketed myself as an animal-friendly attorney. Very on, I was affiliated with the Animal Legal Defense Fund, and because of that, I got a fair amount of legal work because people wanted to hire an attorney who loved animals like they did. And then I started handling animal law cases. Especially, I became known for representing people whose animals had been harmed by other people, especially like, people who had their dogs shot or poisoned by the neighbors and stuff like that. And I won a verdict in Oregon that was at the time the largest verdict in American history for the intentional killing of a companion animal. And so I started becoming affiliated with a lot of the people that were sort of building animal law as a new discipline within the legal realm. I co-authored with three other attorneys the first ever casebook on animal law, and I've been teaching animal law and wildlife law, a whole bunch of classes, since 1997, and I've been teaching as a regular adjunct professor of law at Willamette University in Salem, Oregon, since 2010. So eventually I got to a place where I was getting pretty burned out on practicing law, and just so happens that there was a position available with the Humane Society of the United States to actually set up a horse sanctuary in Oregon. And so I worked for the Humane Society for 12 years. I worked to get that sanctuary set up, but then I moved over into more of the advocacy work. I was the Oregon State Director, where I worked at the state level for animal protection, but I also worked as an equine welfare specialist for HSUS. And so I worked at the national level on everything from the slaughter issue to horse soaring, the racing issue, just everything related to horses. And that eventually, through that expertise and all of that experience, it kind of, put me on the map as someone who was known for that, for being an animal advocate, but with a special passion for horses. And so, I ended up, here at the Wild Horse Refuge, I love this work and I love their mission. And so it fits very well together, me and the Wild Horse Refuge. Me is sort of a voice for the wild horses. And it's just worked out, really well. Believe me, what you said, I don't take a single moment for granted of me working for my passion, because I know how many people don't have that opportunity. A lot of people, they feel an issue so passionately, but they're not able to make that their living. And I have been able to make that my living. And believe me, it is an absolute gift, and one that I am very, very grateful for.
Well, it's awesome, and you can hear your passion in your voice as you speak about it. And And it's got to be, I would imagine, pretty satisfying working with the Wild Horse Refuge now, because it's not just sort of fighting things that have gone wrong, but you're actually able to move towards something that, like you said, is working. It's like, go here
Yeah.
instead of stop
No,
doing this or
and
stop doing this, you know?
yes, it's very impactful work. And again, the mission here is to absolutely have the best interests of these horses at that is the center of the mission. That is the whole purpose. And it's all about giving these animals not just their freedom, but actual habitat. And that is the mission of the Wild Animal Sanctuary. It goes for the big cats and the bears at the other sanctuary. The goal here is to take animals that have been languishing in bad conditions and provide them with a natural free roaming life. For these horses, many of these horses sat in government corrals for years, for years.
Yeah.
And for those horses who lost their freedom to be turned out onto 30,000 acres and where they can meet up with other horses, some horses that they may have known back in there when they were out on the public lands, and see them never have to worry again about where they're going to find water, never see them worry again about making sure that there's enough forage during the winter, and literally being able to run just for the sheer joy of running. And that happens a lot at the Wild Horse
Oh, that's
Refuge. You
so
see
cool.
these horses just galloping across the hillside for no reason other than they're free and that's what they want to do. You see things that just blow your mind. A mixed herd of pronghorn antelope and mustangs running together. And apparently the only thing that they're running for is because they all love just running across
Wow.
the range. It's an amazing thing. So being able to provide that for these animals, that is why this organization takes such pride and cares so deeply about being able to do this. In terms of impact, we are having an unprecedented impact, not just as a solution for wild horses, but an impact in the lives of individual animals who were in bad situations and now just have an amazing life being who they are with whoever
Yeah.
they want to be with. And it's obviously it's a very rewarding thing.
That's so cool. I want to come see this herd.
Well, all you got to do, Karen, is reach out to me and I can make that happen.
I will. I already told my husband, I'm like, we're going to Colorado next year, after the snow goes away.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would just, and I'm sure you might be asking me this eventually, but the best way for people to learn about our work is to go to wildhorserefuge.org and you will be able to see videos and photos. You can also, find ways to support our work, whether it's through just a sponsoring an individual animal and paying a monthly amount toward that animal. We also have what's called a founders program, where you contribute the equivalent of the purchase price of 1 acre of this land, which is $777. That entitles you to a VIP tour of the refuge. We have an annual founders day where all of the founders come together, and it's just an amazing gathering
Wow.
of people who support the work. So wildhorserefuge.org, that is the best way to reach out. And if people want to reach out to me individually and ask me questions, you can email me at scott@wildanimalsanctuary.org.
Beautiful. Thank you for putting that in
Yeah.
there. Yeah. Can you give me an idea of how many horses are in the refuge? How many horses are in those BLM holding pens? And then how do you select which horses are coming back to the refuge?
So remember that the Wild Horse Refuge only takes Colorado-born wild horses. And so right now, on 30,000 acres, we have just over 250 wild horses that we have adopted from the BLM. We also take and we go to these adoption events here in Colorado that that the BLM holds, and horses that don't get adopted, we will adopt. We're especially concerned about those sale authority horses, also known as three strikes horses. These are horses that are 10 years old or older, or have been put up for adoption at least three times and not adopted, because those are horses that the BLM can sell for $25, and you get your certificate of title right then and there. So they're the horses that are most at risk, and we want to make sure that those horses have a safe place to come. So we do go to those adoption events, and we work very closely with the BLM, and we're very, very grateful for our good working relationship with the Colorado BLM. It's been a pleasure working with them to make sure that that these horses are safe and provided for. So there are probably by now, somewhere close to 60,000 or more wild horses that have been rounded up and removed from Western public lands that are now in privately held holding facilities. Those are everything from the government corrals in holding facilities like Canyon City, Colorado, Burns, Oregon, and elsewhere. But so those are short-term holding facilities. There are also long-term holding facilities, and these tend to be larger pastures owned by private ranchers, especially in the Midwest, and they take these large numbers of wild horses from the BLM, and they hold them on their ranches, and they get paid to do that. And there are some ranches in the Midwest where these folks were not making it work with beef cattle or other livestock, and so they decided instead to become, wild horse holding facilities, and now, they're making a better living doing that. So,
Oh, wow.
so,
Wonderful.
you know, th and the conditions vary. Horses living on big open pastures in the Midwest, that's not a bad life. It certainly beats, sitting in, crowded corrals in places like Rock Springs, Wyoming, where the horses are, they're overcrowded, and it's just not an ideal for those animals. And so being able to, get those animals out of there, that if we could have a facility like the Wild Horse Refuge in every Western state that has a wild horse population, that would be absolutely amazing. And we would absolutely love to see that. We would love to see a place in every state for unadopted wild horses to go, where they could live out the rest of their lives and be safe and be secure forever. That would be an amazing, amazing thing to see.
Hey, I just wanted to take a quick second to let you know that this podcast is brought to you by the Dressage Naturally Video Classroom. Yeah, that's my program. So if you love this podcast, you will really love the video classroom. It's where you can see me coaching students, narrating my rides on horses, the good, the bad, and the ugly, and so much more. So let's see all these words put into action. Check it out with a 1 week free trial, and then it's just $29 a month after that. So even if you only watch one video a month, it is totally worth it. And we add new content every month. So what are you waiting for? Go to dressagenaturally.net/classroom. Okay, now let's get back to the pod. That's cool. So do you feel you guys have a reproducible model? Then it sounds like yours, it's working. And it's
It is
something
working. It
that's.
absolutely is working. It's expensive. I mean, it costs a lot of money to buy the land. It costs money to do all of the capital improvements, the fencing and the barns and all the other things. It's expensive. But what is important to note is that it doesn't really cost that much to care for the horses themselves, because they're out there beating horses. And the same thing could be said for the horses living out there on Western public lands. They're not costing the taxpayers anything. They only start costing the taxpayers when they get rounded up and put into holding. That's when they start becoming expensive. So yes, it would be amazing to see a facility like this replicated, wherever there are wild horses.
That's so cool. What's your capacity? You said you have 200 and something on 30,000 acres. What's the potential? For
You
how
know,
many people?
that is an open question. And because here's an important thing to remember. This is a refuge for wild horses, but it is also a refuge for hundreds of mule deer, hundreds of pronghorn antelope. We have elk, we have jackrabbits, we have lots of little prairie dogs, and all of those creatures need a healthy, thriving ecosystem. We also have, you know, we have predator species. We have mountain lions, bobcats, coyotes, golden eagles, bald eagles, badgers.
Wow.
So we want this to be a thriving ecosystem for everyone. So it's very important for us to feel like we are being responsible stewards of the land. We have range experts come out every year. They do an assessment to let us know, are there areas being overgrazed? No, it remains to be seen. We are, I would say we are not at capacity at this time. We have 250 horses, plus all those other wild species, and all of those species are doing amazing. In fact, the greater sage grouse, which is a large chicken-sized a bird, you know, is dwindling. Its population is dwindling across the American West. But we have the largest breeding lek, which is a territory where these birds all come together to do their courtship and mating rituals. We have the largest breeding lek in the state of Colorado, and
Wow.
we are that that sage grouse do great in an ecosystem that is managed for wild horses and other species. So, but we want that to continue. We don't want any of these other species to suffer, and we don't want the land to suffer. So we're being very careful about sure that we can accommodate, you know, more horses. And at some point, you know, if we get the assessment that, hey, you know, you're at capacity right now, then, you know, we would probably, you know, stop. And, you know, remember that many of our horses are older or middle-aged, and so there will be a natural process of attrition that will open up the opportunity to bring more in. But, you know, we are only 2 years into this project, and so we're still,
Oh,
you know, we're still learning,
it's
and we're,
young.
it is. But we're trying to be very responsible, and we're trying to be, you know, very aware of the conditions, so that, you know, we're providing, you know, the best possible experience for the wild horses and all of those other wildlife species that live there.
Now that's awesome because I think that, the health of the land and the biodiversity and, it's all connected. It's if it's just a big patch for, only horses and everybody else is dying, it's not really doing what I
No,
think you want it to do.
that's absolutely true. That's absolutely true. And that's what, you know, when I give tours to people, when I drive out there, they're blown away at the beauty of the wild horses, and they're blown away at how much space these animals have. But invariably, they are also blown away because they're going to see golden eagles. They're going to see, you know, pronghorn dashing alongside the vehicles. And, you know, I mean, it's just for them to be able to see that this is not just a sanctuary for horses, but an actual thriving habitat for all kinds of species. You know, it really deepens people's appreciation for what we're doing.
That's so cool. What would you say is your biggest challenge at the sanctuary right now, or at the Wild Horse Refuge?
I can't think of a single one.
Oh,
I mean, you know,
that's pretty cool.
you know, obviously, you know, we had a very dry summer. We're in a drought across the American West. And we have 14 wells on the property. So there's no shortage of water, but, you know, we have water holes which in summers that aren't quite so dry stay full year round. But many of those water holes did go dry. So we had to, you know, we had to truck some water in to make sure that the horses, you know, because we don't want the horses having to start wander to look for water. We want them to have water close by to the areas that we know that they like to be in. So, you know, the drought conditions, you know, I would say are one worry, but thank goodness, you know, unlike I know a lot of other ranchers and facilities, you know, we have the ability to provide water, you know, just because of all of our wells and springs and so forth.
Oh, that's cool. And yeah, how maybe say again just how people can get involved and how they can help. And I know this is probably going to be touching a lot of people's hearts and Yeah, what can people do to help you guys?
Yeah, absolutely. The best resource to learn more about the work at the Wild Horse Refuge is to go online at Wild Horse Refuge, all one word, wildhorserefuge.org, and explore that website. You'll see some amazing video of our horses and photographs, and you'll also learn about, the broader wild horse issue and how, the need for facilities like this came about. And then if people want to reach out to me directly and ask me questions, then email me at Scott, Scott, at wildanimalsanctuary.org.
Awesome. And now you mentioned there's, as part of this, I guess, this private facility, there's three actually, right? So the horses have 30,000 acres, and then there's 10,000 other acres that are,
Yes.
more exotic. Can you talk a little bit about those? And the
Yeah,
are there
so
two
our
other ones
so
and
the
how they're different or the same or?
Yeah, absolutely. So the Wild Horse Refuge is the newest and largest in terms of space of the three wild animal sanctuary facilities. The flagship sanctuary is the Wild Animal Sanctuary in Keensburg, which is just outside of Denver. And it was established, 40 years ago or more, primarily as a private sanctuary for rescued exotic wildlife that had, came from bad situations. And our founder and director, Pat Craig, has for all of those years, been focused on the mission of getting animals out of bad situations and providing them not just with another cage, but with actual habitat. So, a lot of these animals came from, bad situations with, roadside zoos. And, there was a group of lions that came from Ukraine, a zoo in Ukraine. We have, animals that were rescued after the floods in Puerto Rico. And, these animals came from basically, many of these animals had never seen blue sky. They had never set foot
Wow.
on ground. And so, they are provided not just with, like I said, another enclosure, but with habitat. Sometimes these habitats are hundreds of acres, and these animals can literally just roam all day if that's what they want to do. So the facility in Keensburg, it is our only public facing facility. People, you can go there, you can take your family, you can buy a ticket, and we have an elevated walkway that's 1.5 miles long, and you walk over these enclosures where you're looking down at the animals. It's really interesting because the animals don't notice what's going on above them. They're not bothered at all in the same way as if, you were at ground level looking at them, sort of face to face. So this gives a really, really great view of these animals and their lives and their habitats that they've been provided with. The second facility is the Wild Animal Refuge outside of Springfield, Colorado, down in the southeastern corner. It is 10,000 acres. There's a If you picture two boxes, there's a large box, and then inside the large box is a small box. That's 2,500 acres that is habitat for wild carnivores, large carnivores, wolves, bears, tigers, lions. And then the outside of that box is 7,500 acres, and that is home for about 150 wild horses that came from other states. And so they get all of that space to roam and wander. And we have taken other horses from other states into that facility. We are currently at capacity in terms of our wild horses, so we're not in a position to take any more horses at this time. But no, these again, the primary mission of all of these three facilities is to make sure that these animals can reclaim some freedom and have as natural a life as we can possibly give them.
I love that. And I just, when you think about some of those animals, and I can't even imagine some of the circumstances they came from. And I mean, I love that even though you made it's public facing, it's the animals have the priority, and then you're going to have to do this weird contrivance to get the humans somehow to be able to see it, where
Yes.
so many times everything is based on, like, let's make it easy for the human to be in an air conditioned space with a nice viewing glass, and then the animals are stuck in that so that the humans can
No,
look at them and.
absolutely. And this is the guiding philosophy, and it's the guiding philosophy not just of the other two sanctuaries, but also of the Wild Horse Refuge. We want these animals to live as free as possible from human interference. So at the Wild Horse Refuge, we want these animals to stay wild. We do not want them to get habituated to people. We have a strict no treats policy. We don't want the horses to look at us as a source of food even. We want them to stay wild. And it's the same for all the other animals. We want as much as possible for them to live a life that doesn't involve people constantly getting in their business and messing with them. We want them to just have a life of peace and freedom.
That is so beautiful, and thank you for what you do, because yeah, it makes my heart happy to know that someone's out there doing that hard work to make that happen. It's amazing how much hard work and money and time and energy it takes just to have something natural these days.
It
It's
really
just the
is. But
reality, but
and I think it's obvious to anyone who understands how things are changing, how we are losing these wild places, how we are losing the wildness. It is getting harder and harder to find, truly wild places where animals and other species are able to just kind of be who they're supposed to be. And so that makes this work extra rewarding to have as the central and really only priority to make sure that these animals have a really, really great experience for the rest of their lives, whether they are wild Mustangs at the Wild Horse Refuge, whether they are lions and tigers and bears and wolves and jaguars and foxes at the other facilities. The whole point is let them be who they are in an area where they don't have to worry about anything.
love it, love it. And I just want to say out loud the amount of self-control it took me to not interrupt you and say, "Oh my," every time you said lions and tigers and bears.
Yeah,
I mean,
well,
I'm like biting my tongue.
kind of rolls off the tongue, doesn't it?
It does. So twice now I've been able to not say it. But I had to say
You should
it
have. You actually, you should have.
then.
It would have been the perfect little.
Anyway, thank you so much, Scott, for sharing all that. I'm so glad I went ahead and connected with you, and I'm so glad you popped on this. And I am really looking forward to meeting you in person again, hopefully out there where we can gaze upon a herd of happily galloping horses or horses that are doing whatever they want to
Exactly.
do.
And Karen, I want to thank you first for having me as a guest on your show, but I also want to thank you for the incredible work that you're doing for your love of horses. As we've talked about, for having the sometimes uncomfortable conversations that we need to
Yeah.
have to make the world a better place for these animals that we love so much.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you.
If this episode resonates with you, make sure you subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening. Training horses is a long game. The more you listen, the more pieces of the puzzle you'll have. To see all your learning resources, visit dressagenaturally.net. That's where you'll find free videos, online courses, my book. You can sign up for my Wednesday Wisdom email or even book a private consult. Most of all, remember, you got this. Never underestimate the possibility for things to improve in ways you cannot yet imagine. Till next time, love your horse. Move in harmony and enjoy the process.